This hour of programming is brought to you by the Urbana Park District and the listeners of WEFT. The Urbana Park District has been closely following the Center for Disease Control guidelines on the coronavirus and has implemented several precautions to help keep their patrons safe. All Urbana Park District facilities, programs, events, and rentals are canceled, and all buildings will be closed through April, at which time the situation will be reassessed. All Urbana Park District offices are closed to walk-in visits, but staff will be available to answer phones to handle registrations and refunds. Please visit urbanaparks.org for additional information.
This is Dave Monk, Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial. And it's virus time, so we're still experimenting. This week I want to say something about the Big Grove. The Big Grove was a 10-square-mile area just northeast of Urbana. What I want to say is kind of general. I don't have a lot of research on it, but I imagine that the Urbana Moraine, the moraine that comes through from Philo, fairly high. It's and it keeps going and dwindles out at about Rantoul. It's a typical moraine. It has areas that are perched water tables where glaciers, continental glaciers, dropped material that was either carried on top of the continental glacier or in it or scraped underneath it. And the deposits were different according to the climate of the time. And the result of that is still present on that Yankee Ridge. Farmers that farm the top of the ridge have drainage problems because of that. That area, blocked drainage that comes in from the north of Champaign and Urbana. It's known as the Boneyard, but the Boneyard Creek has tributaries. And when glaciers were in full swing, there wasn't a lot of leakage into that drainage basin. But once the world warmed up some, then that became a lake, a swampy lake. Champaign County was settled last because it was swampy. On the west side of Champaign, there's an extension of the Champaign Moraine which separates this drainage basin from the Sangamon River drainage basin. So we have a lake, and eventually it bursts through the Yankee Ridge Moraine, or the Urbana Moraine, and that corridor became the Salt Creek, and it goes down to Vermilion County and to the Vermilion River and to the Wabash and the Ohio and the Mississippi and out to the Gulf. The forest trees that were native to the area at the time were not a lot. They mostly did not like wet feet, and the glacial till that comes with the moraine is gravelly and it is well drained, and it's a little higher than the surrounding swampland. So trees began to get in there. Prairie came back. Prairie can handle dampness. Not total dampness, but a fair bit of dampness. Some trees, cottonwood in particular, can handle a lot of water. So they would be out in the hinterlands, not a lot, just here and there, And they can also handle drought because they have roots that go down into the aquifers, and so they can survive. Most of the other trees are confined to the big grove. The big grove has been researched quite a bit. It has been a particular interest to settlement. Early settlers came. They were used to forested areas, perhaps in their home country. But most of all, they wanted to be away from malaria that was out in the swampland. These mosquitoes were a bother. And they wanted the protection of the forest from the winds. And the forest provided lumber. So this was a good place to settle your home. And you took down some forest and put roads through it. So this is where Urbana was first settled. There was a small town and post office and blacksmith. And it was a little village, and there was a road through brownfield woods. There were three, four parts to what's left of the big grove. It was 10 square miles, and brownfield is probably the best representation. It was about 13 different trees. Treeless woods is about a mile to the east, and is another example. In that case, there's a little bit of prairie soil where forests are on prairie soil, so that's a little bit different. And then there was Phillips Track, which was acquired by the university fairly recently. Brownfield has been in university hands probably for the best part of 100 years. Treeless, not quite so long. Then there is Busey Woods. Busey Woods was privately owned for a long time. And eventually it was given to the university, and then with a number of different machinations, it was given to the Urbana Park District. The creek, or almost river, you should say, meandered like most rivers do. They cut in at one bank and dump a beach on the other side, and that's very typical. It is a sigmoid curve that is associated with the pressure of water on the upper end and a blockage on the southern end. So the river goes into meanders. When you want to do agriculture, then you have to cut those meanders. You want water off quickly, so you drain in that manner. That leaves oxbow lakes, and so in some places you can see sycamores and other trees that like a little water, and they're in those oxbow lakes, and that's where you would like to find all sorts of water-based creatures. And sometimes it's referred to as a vernal pond, because that pond will be wet with local water, not the water that's been cut off and sent down the river. And that vernal pond gets green in spring and has water fleas and all sorts of other interesting creatures in there. And sometimes the meander had several scars, so you have several scars that you can work with. The area was populated with Indian tribes. They didn't stay during the winter. The areas in Vermilion County were much more protective during winter, but they would come in summer. They would come with arrow head material, flint and ox obsidian. It's a very sharp, glassy sort of geological rock that is good for arrowheads, they would have stashes of these arrowheads, and they would leave them there when they went back in winter. In summer, they would grow melons and corn, and they knew how to work as a prairie. They knew how to burn, and they would sometimes create a burn that was a circle with a neck to it, an outlet, and the animals that moved through that outlet would be captured by people who knew how to hunt in that situation. But the Indian people would know that if you burn, the response of the prairie was much more healthy. They probably were involved with forest fires too, because most of the fires came naturally by lightning strike and didn't confine themselves to prairie or forest. The settlers didn't like burning in the forest, so they made means to prevent fires. That was not so healthy because it allows certain trees to take over. One of the trees that takes over is a maple. A maple has gazillions of nice little helicopter seeds, and it grows well. It is very susceptible to fire. And if you have settlers who don't want fire, then the maple population takes over. The trees, Vargas in his research a long time ago figured there were about 13 trees in brownfield woods, which is representative of the others. There would be some lowland trees like bur oak. There were upland trees, dry red oak and pink chinkapin oak, and there would be the in-betweens, the tilliers or basswood. Basswood has a bunch of tillers, and when one gets old, one falls over and another tiller takes on. The brownfield woods, as a representative of the big grove, is rambunctious. It's a little hilly because it has some of the moraine. That's the Yankee Ridge moraine. This is locally known as High Cross Road. You get to brownfield woods that way. A wonderful place. It's about 60 odd acres, and there are trails through it. It is closed to the general public, but the general public was protective of it. Natalia Belting, a historian, lived across the way with a French-style house, and if people got into the brownfield woods and looked like they were doing untoward things, she would make sure that the law and university and everyone else knew what was going on. So the area is fenced, but this was one of the few areas that were available to the public. So there were trails and little booklets that were simplistic, but they gave people a chance to examine the woods. You can walk in the front gate. There was a walnut tree that would drop its load of berries, but if you looked, that straight trunk would have been worth quite a lot of money for veneer. You'd walk in and then turn to your left a little bit, and you'd be on flatlands. So there's where you would have some wetland species. Or Kentucky oak, or Kentucky forgetting, but it was a tree that probably came from further south, and then you had to cross the stream. You could walk across a gravelly bed, or you could walk blunder on a tree that had fallen down. And when a tree falls down, it often opens up the forest, and you have occasion for a regrowth succession. The trees like that like more light, like locust and maple and a lot of weed growth would take up the space, and gradually that succession would be taken back to basically a eastern oak hickory forest. The soils were interesting. The university dug some soil pits so that people could understand the difference between a lower, more organic soil, like a Drummer or Flanagan, and the top there would be the xeric soils that didn't have quite the same organic content because of the leaching down the hill. So there was a catena of soils in the forest. You could take a walk along a little creek that came down and through the woods. Relatively clean because people had settled on the trees and hadn't really polluted it. A lot of spice bush if you walk along that bottom land towards the northwest corner, you would find a big baroque, and it had bracket fungi on it, which is a sort of an indication that there's a root or a part of that tree that's dying. So the older trees were probably about 400 years old. People don't like to drill into a tree to count its rings because it leaves the tree a little vulnerable to bacteria and fungi. But the guesswork is that some of the older trees have been up towards 400 years old. Most of them are more recent, and certainly the trees have been cut over some. The road that runs through was the sort of road that you would run a sulky on it. In fact, there's a little bit of local lore where a horse bolted through the forest for some reason. It might have been freaked out by an animal or something like that. And the couple had a baby, and the comment was, I think they threw the baby out. A little bit like a kangaroo throwing a kangaroo joey out of its pouch, just in case the wagon rolled over. You can see that road. You can see the maple. There were more recent trees growing on the road and the older trees leaning over. And so we're walking up this corridor, and there's a couple of little tributaries coming in from different place. And right on the northwest corner, there was a nice edge timber. And that edge timber morphed into a little bit of prairie. If you have more fires, the forest retreats a little, and the prairie comes in. If you don't have, then the forest will advance out into the prairie. So you can walk around the outer skirts of Brownfield Woods and see the edge timber vegetation with the trees reaching out to the sunlight in a oblique manner, rather than where the trees are in the center of the forest, are more likely to be tall and slender, reaching to the sunlight. If you're a forester, you probably harvest the trees that are internal. If you're nice and early settlers, you would take out the one tree you wanted and you'd take it out with oxen. You would take it out with pulleys so that you could pull it around through other trees and leave the forest relatively intact. That's very different from the way most forestry is done now. You just clear cut the whole lot and burn what you don't want. You can see the remnants of human activity in this woodland. Eventually, there were some land offers in Urbana, where Urbana now is, and that meant that Urbana basically moved to the prison site. So the little village that was around Brownfield Woods lost some of its character, but it's still there if you take Brownfield Road, or if you take High Cross Road, you'll run into some history. There were also the glacial till that is provided by the moraine is very popular for road pack. And so there were several deep ponds that were initially gravel pits. Not always successful because we have glaciation. Called stratigraphy. So this underground aquifer business is not just one aquifer like an underground river. It's lenticels. And if you're a dealer in gravel, if you reach a lenticel where there was a lot of deposit of glacial till, then you were lucky. If you didn't make it, then you had a big pit and a really successful, economically feasible gravel. So those pits are sometimes filled with strange things. They're sort of environmentally questionable. But that's the history. Along the banks of the Salt Fork, there are several of those pits. What else can I tell you about Brownfield Woods? It's wonderful to go in there at this time of the year. It's understory flowers are wonderful. While the canopy hasn't closed over, you have bloodroot and Dutchman's breeches and squirrel corn and May apples, but will come later, and Jack in the Pulpit and oh, no, what all. So it's a wonderful place to be. I was involved some with botany people who were not doing a lot of field trips. These were often large classes with future teachers. And I was involved with that because I felt that if teachers were going to go out without knowing or having some experience with field trips, then that was going to be a problem. And one of the difficulties with field trips early on was that it's a thing called in loco parentis. It means that the university is in charge of the student and can therefore be responsible for any problem. So if John Willie gets hit on the head with a stone that was thrown by someone, then the university might be involved. If you have a large classes like 600 students, then you also have a busing problem and you have to get people there. You also have to think about damaging the forest. If you want students to get an idea of sampling. And so these trees, what is the litter fall? Can you catch and define and measure the litter fall and understand the carbon process, the nitrogen process? And so these woods are gridded every so often with a stake, as you can see, so that you can come back. And one of the researchers was to have trays located at known places so that the litter could be collected at intervals. There were instruments there that would measure the temperature of the soil at various levels. So this was a research place of note, but it also allowed some education to go on. Just up the road, about a mile away to the east, was Treeley's Woods, acquired a little later. A very different woods. It has glades in it, and it didn't have a formal trail as there was in Brownfield Woods. And it lacked the prairie element, so the university acquired land that was adjacent to Treeley's Woods for a prairie. And they also dug a pond for so Dr. Horsfield and others who were doing research on mosquitoes could have a pond that they could check out the mosquito population. Recently, students have been working with university staff people to document the tree population in Treeley's Woods. Treeley's is so named because Treeley's was a botanist, and he was also a well-known gentleman, and so one of the housing units is also named Treeley's. He had a book on winter botany so that you could check out your trees with the buds and the character. Often in winter time, the drop of the leaves allows you to see the structure of a tree. An elm tree is very different from a say a locust tree on the edge timber. So Treeley's Woods has a reputation of having some of it on prairie soil, like the forest has advanced. Some of this advancement probably had to do with the settlers who liked the forest. So there's also been some human element to Treeley's Woods. More recently, across the road, there is Phillips Track. And Phillips Track was a farmland, early settlement, a two-story farmhouse built with, I strongly suspect it was a walnut from the Big Grove. There was a school, a Blackberry school, sort of a one-room school. It was later replaced by another school that's just down the road and still exists and it was lived in. Phillips Track was farmland that was acquired. There was a drive to join Brownfield and Treeley's Woods so you'd have more sense of the Big Grove. Didn't exactly happen, but there was the Phillips Track, named after people who probably owned the land and settled nearby. The Treeley's family and others had lots of collections of Indian arrowheads that we spoke about before. Just up the road, there was a church, and the church went defunct. And if you want to find a nice little grove of trees that is probably owned by the state, nobody really knows, there's a little hill there, which is part of that moraine, the Yankee Ridge Moraine. And this little forest, you can see the basement of the church that probably went defunct because of the congregation died. There are houses nearby because the houses like to be near the forest. So those three areas have been in change, because the Busey Woods was a part of the Big Grove, and it was on the boneyard that came down, that drainage district that came down past a country club under what is now 74. And it had a large meander. The meander was channelized, so now you can stand on a bridge. It's the road bridge, the road that goes around the Busey Woods. And you can see the cottonwoods growing near the moisture on the channel. The meanders was partially filled in. There was an attempt to make this area a industrial site, or better yet, a high-priced housing site. It didn't quite work, but it broke the Meandersk or the Oxbow Lake in two. So they're two different ponds, and they have different characters. And the Banner Park District has put trails through and stairwells, so you can visit each of these places. And you can also visit the dump site and see the elements of a buried car or a refrigerator which is dumped there. The area is very close to a cemetery and a golf course and a fairgrounds, and all of this is an adjunct space, and it allows birds and bees and small mammals to expand out into that space and come back to Busey Woods as a place to be. Sometimes Busey Woods has been a rookery. There have been rookeries around where birds will accumulate at night. One was on Cunningham Avenue, but it was removed by development, and then the rookery moved into Busey Woods for a while. It has not been quite so used lately, but there are owls and all manner of creatures there. There are even pieces of stairwells, concrete stairwells, and past the era when the woods was being dumped. To the south, there is was an open space. The Busey Woods was used by horse people, especially at showtime, and I think a cow or two has roamed around the south side of the Busey Woods, and we have some rather wonderful pictures of that many years ago by Susan Jordy. I can see the trees. The regrowth succession was such that a oak tree won't grow out in the middle of an open space. It needs a shade. So you have an accumulation of creatures, locust trees, and other vegetation that gradually accumulates and provides the shade that you need for shade-loving forest trees. And they have come now. So those pictures of many years ago show us a little bit of what was there. And even some of the invasive trees that come with people who dump things, like honeysuckle. There's Bradley Avenue could potentially go through the woods, but it didn't. It went around the north end of the woods, past a crypt where bodies were kept in wintertime when the soil was frozen and it was too hard to dig a grave. So when spring came, you took the bodies and then buried them. These days, a high hoe or a backhoe can dig a grave, and it's a crypt that is historic. But as you go around the north end of the woods, you see that crypt. And you get some of the element of the remain we're talking about. There's been an attempt to get money to buy the country club. Not the country club, the champagne festival area. The county fairgrounds have moved as development has occurred. They've been further south in Banner. They've been in Champaign. There's always been an attempt to move the county fairground out. So it was not in my backyard business. It doesn't always work. This fairground has been not only a place where you share your prime cow or your vegetable that grows well or your corn that is nice. People get to show in Great Hall, and people have techniques for making sure that their particular creature does interesting things. If you are a show person for a beef cow, you might just douse it with water to make sure that its back was nice and straight. You might, if you're doing corn and you wanted all the cobs to be the same level, you'd cut the bottom 6 inches off one stem so that it make it at the same level. There are various techniques. It's wonderful to have this display of fruit and vegetables and goods and cattle and horses and to have races, and it's a very popular place. So the attempt to increase Pusey Woods by the amount of the fairground didn't work. I think after some various machinations, some of the money that was destined to go in that direction went to Meadowbrook Park and further south on Vine and Race, and so that's also a popular place now. A little bit of history there. A swimming pool was put in, and once the park was given to the Urbana Park District, they built an Anita Purvis Center. Anita Purvis was a 35-year-old mother of two with a biology degree, and she would go into the vernal pond and look at the mussels that were there. And she was very attuned to Pusey Woods. We have a whole number of people who are attuned to Pusey Woods. They range from Audubon to geology people to people who just want to walk around and observe the birds. The Anita Purvis Center has a window and Beth Chato and Helen Parker and others who have been around for years and supportive of all this stuff. I have a little store there. We can buy animal puppets and books, and you can observe animals that can't be out in the wild because they have a broken wing or a bad eye, but they're enough to allow people to see what an owl looks like, and so there's a trail through the woods, and part of it is Broadwalk, and the Broadwalk is wide enough for people to walk, but it keeps people out of the mud when it's wet in spring and you want to check out all the warblers that are coming through, then it's muddy. So the Broadwalk has been rather wonderful. There are trees that have fallen and sometimes fallen over the river, and you can see the marks where animals climb up these this fallen tree to reach other trees. And you can have a dip net like Anita Purvis and see what's growing there in spring. It starts very early in spring with water fleas and gradually gets more mature. And in summertime, it often will dry up. You can almost walk across them. So the little stands that run out into the water so that you can see, you can dip net, you can just sit there and enjoy. There are also interesting plants growing along an easement. When Bradley Avenue didn't go through Busey Woods, and I applaud sometime who decided that the road should go around Busey Woods instead of through Busey Woods. So, okay, there's now a power line, and the power lines don't like trees underneath them. That's too short. So there is an easement right through the middle of the woods that's like a continuation of Bradley Avenue. That grows interesting plants. In some places, there was a single oak tree. It's died now, and its logs are there, and they're rotting, and they go through their retinue of different fungi that may be orange and at one stage or change as the tree breaks down. There are seats that make people feel comfortable. At one stage, that very area was a motorcycle circle. And so people would come into the woods and zoom around there. Zoom, 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 zoom. So woods has its moments. So Busey Woods has been assigned the educational side. So Brownfield Woods and Treeleys Woods and Phillips Tract become research. It's access is allowed. The Blackridge School is still an element of the Blackridge School there. The building is gone. Tayo Gray has the elements of that in Broadlands. And one of these days it might be resurrected as a historic monster. So now what I want to say is that Champaign County was 94% prairie. And I want you to know the forest so you know the proportionality of it. It's very tempting to plant trees. You can hug a tree, you can enjoy a tree, you can lie under its shade. Prairies aren't the same cat. They're not so easy to work with. You can get chiggers, or you can find it very hard to work your way through cordgrass or wetland stuff. But there's almost none of it left. So we have to think as we do things like put in a kickboot trail, we need to think about preserving some of the railroad right-of-way prairie that exists between Banner and Danville. It's a 25-mile trail. It's being developed in phases. So the first phase is 7 miles. And very popular. It allows small communities to get together. It has economic value. There's a restaurant at the end of the trail in St. Joe. It is doing very well. But it's wide. And it took out not only the original prairie. When you build a railroad, you are going ahead straight. You probably at the most take up 25 feet of what usually is about 100 feet wide right away. So you have an engine that pushes a load of rail and ties and you do the thing of putting in miles of railroad per day when railroads were in vogue. You put down the gravel, make a ballast, put down the ties, 2,000 per mile, and then you put down the track. All of this loaded on the small crane that was a flatbed, and then you'd move along. The engine would follow on. So these the plants at the edge are not pristine, but they're on fairly pristine soil that hasn't been disturbed very much. There are weeds. There are farm plants like corn or soybeans, or worse yet, sweet clover. And these have been invaded, but the soil is still there and original. So we cherish that. Early ecologists, Vestal and Shelford and Kendi, worked with the Big Four that owned that railroad line, and they would use it as a teaching site. Even when in the early 60s, the prairie on either side of the railroad bed at Mayview were really rich. And unfortunately, the width of the trail is so wide that it's taken out most of that prairie. One of the students there was George Fell, and he went off to create the Nature Conservancy. So some of that prairie was our history, and it's gone. And I worry about that. So we also have the temptation of having a highway alongside 150, and it takes out part of that 100 foot right away. So the first 7 miles is interesting. At near to St. Joe, it diverts and goes a little south so that it can cross the river at a node rather than at the amplitude of the stream. There's a temptation there. There's a relatively intact remnant there. It's a road that went straight. You go to the grain company that's there, and now the road goes straight through St. Joe. In the past, it didn't go straight. It went parallel to the railroad line, which is usually what happened when roads came in, and went through St. Joe in a different manner. It's tempting to take that original soil and add plants to it. I cherish the thought of leaving it do its own thing, because the plants are there. They've been born for many years. But now that the Forest Preserve owns that site, I cherish that. I hope not to see pollinator plants or cultivars or even prairie plants that are not part of that original territory. The Forest Preserve has wonderful intentions. They've gathered seed, and they will restore some of that prairie. I have some questions. Sometimes when you're putting in a trail, it's cheaper to sculpt the whole landscape with a bulldozer and a laser beam and just do that to the whole 7 miles. If you need drainage, you take the soil out, and some of that has gone to Homer Lake. But that soil, when it's sculpted, is soft, and it's taken out the prairie. It's more costly to put a high hole on the edge and say, this, we only need to move 4 inches here. If you move 4 inches, the roots of all those annual prairie plants are still there, and they can grow. They can grow back. And that's better than replacing with seed and going through a whole weedy thing. The disturbance causes weeds. And now, I've got a few moments. I want to say that this prairie starts at the east side of St. Joe. The prairie that goes east about a mile to a big S-shaped bridge over the Union Pacific Railroad and goes on to Ogden, Fithian, and Oakwood was rich with prairie. But development has happened on the south side and on the north side, and the culture is that this is mown. And I think that's a tragedy, because this is our history, this is their history. There's the soil, it's original, it's been manipulated for the input of railroad, but it's wonderful, and I hope that that area will return to prairie. It will take a lot of courage to convert that back to the prairie that was. Some of it is still in there and grows because it's a little rambunctious and can't be mown easily with a 15-foot mower. Once you're over the S-shaped bridge, if you are dangerous, you can stand on that bridge and look at the corridor that goes through from St. Joe to Ogden, Fithian, and Oakwood. It has a main line, which is what the Kickapoo Trail is going to be on. It hasn't been developed yet, but it also has an interurban, which is parallel, and that interurban goes right through from my valley. And it was also rich in prairie. And I am hoping, and I think others are hoping too, that the corridor between St. Joe and Oakwood will be narrower, so that it won't be so that bicycles can run at 35 miles an hour and wander past doing that. It will be more of a nature trail, and it will save the prairie on either side. In order to do that, we have to think about what we're saving compared with the big grove that was here. The big grove we have some elements of, but we have very few elements of prairie. And these are local elements. You can go to other places and find prairie, but this is where the person who's growing up in Rumpler and has experienced only the little piece of prairie that's here. The power lines often take out a piece of prairie. The roads often take out a piece of prairie. But we have this opportunity. So I really want you to think about a campaign with the Forest Preserve to preserve the dignity to the county line and for the Vermilion County Conservation District to preserve from the county line through to Danville. We don't get into Danville quite. There's a huge bridge there that will be developed. There was one over the Salt Fork at St. Joe, which has been developed, what the process is to prefabricate units of fence and take out a few ties and weld the prefabricated unit to the I-beam underneath. And this is what will happen to that huge bridge, and it'll cost about $3 million to do that, to make sure that it's a quarter of a mile long, 100 feet high, 998 ties that are bridge ties that are huge. And this is will be retained. And you have to remember that this is a rail banking interim trail use agreement. So if somebody wants to take this back, that bridge has to be maintained as a potential railroad bridge if necessary. But it will be, in the interim, a bicycle trail. It'll be surfaced and runs adjacent to the state Kickapoo Park, thus the name Kickapoo Trail. And in that park, there's been a big fault then geologically that it created a place for coal, and so there's deep mining and open cut mining, and each of those ponds has a character. So if you have to deal with a 75-year-old pond, it has a different biodiversity than if it's a 15-year-old pond. And so it has character and biology over there. And so that's what makes this trail interesting. There is a yard for Norfolk Southern, Jones the Corridor, and it keeps usually about a mile back. And so it, toward the fairground, the existing Kickapoo Trail finishes. And secretly, some of us are hoping that one day that mile will be retired and we may be able to go a mile or two into Danville. And it's getting to be the end of my rant. Please think about preserving the prairie on either side of the railroad line between St. Joe and Ogden and Fissian and Oakwood. Doris Westfield has picked seed at just west of Oakwood. We try to preserve that. We hope like crazy that a wide trail will not destroy that piece of land that gave rise to prairie that went over to the Vermilion County Conservation District. This is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial. And keep safe. Bye.
All right, you're tuned to WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM. Thanks for tuning in to your community radio station, where you could hear jazz every Monday through Friday morning from 9 until 11:30.
And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This hour of programming on WEFT is made possible by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Due to the COVID-19 virus, all public performances at Krannert Center are canceled for the remainder of this semester. If any performances become available by way of streaming or other technology, Krannert Center will share that information as soon as possible. Although it is necessary that operations change for a time, Krannert hopes that you continue to gain hope and strength from the arts, even if through different means for now. Krannert Center thanks you for your steadfast support, and they look forward to seeing